This is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. Our special guest this week is a man who is quite familiar, as he helped come up with a show called Jacques Brel's Lonesome Losers of the Night. Say hello to Arnold Johnson. Hello, Arnold.
Hi, Tom.
Great. Can you tell us about the Jacques Brel show, how it came about? Because I know you and Fred Anzavino were the two men that came up with the concept. Is that correct?
Yes, we did. And it really began a couple of years before that, when I was fortunate enough to have Fred want to do another review of my Jacques Brel translations, which was Jacques Brel, Songs of Love and War, and which was a great success when it ran in Chicago for about 6 months. And I felt, as I said, very fortunate to have Fred and the Théo Ubique Company doing some of my work. And when we got to talking back in February, Fred and I decided that it would be interesting to do another show, and this time around to focus it a little more on the nature of a plot with characters, but to tell the whole story in songs.
Well, it certainly is quite a triumph. Tell us about Jacques Brel, because a lot of our listeners may not be familiar with Jacques Brel.
Well, the dates are 1929 to 1978. He was born in Belgium in 1929, and I think it's actually it's always amused me that the two great quote unquote French chansonneurs are both Belgians, Jacques Brel and Georges Brassens. And he was born into a family of manufacturers. Actually, his father started off working in an import-export firm, and then had a company that manufactured cardboard boxes. And Jacques was expected to go into that business too, but he wanted to sing. And in the early 50s, he actually did start performing his own work, and in Brussels, and then went to Paris and became hugely popular.
He was a cabaret singer, is that correct?
He was a cabaret singer. He started off in coffee houses and cabarets, and built up a following in clubs, and then in I think it was 54, he did a concert at the great Olympia Theater in Paris, and that really brought him to attention of the larger public. And in, I think, 56, his song Quand on n'a que l'amour, which the Alive and Well people translated as If We Only Have Love, which I translate in my version as When We've Nothing But Love, which is what actually it says. That became very famous, and then his career just took off. He played a couple of gigs at Carnegie Hall in the 60s. And, of course, in the late 60s, after he had quit concertizing, the show Jacques Brel is Alive and Well and Living in Paris became a huge hit at the Village Gate in New York. And the reason for the title was, of course, that he had, at that point, largely stopped public appearances. And between the late 60s and his death in 1978, he bought a sailboat and was going to sail around the world, wound up eventually settling in the Marquesas, discovered that he had lung cancer. He did a lot of smoking in those coffee houses and cabarets, and Eventually, that's what ended his life. And he still kept writing songs and recording.
He wrote and recorded all his own songs, correct? He didn't really sing too many of other people's numbers, right?
No, the songs he most notably did that weren't his own occurred when he translated into French Man of La Mancha.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he translated Man of La Mancha for the express purpose of playing Quixote himself. And he did that very successfully in Europe. And it's quite interesting to, you know, since I've been translating his stuff into English, it's quite interesting to read his translations of English into French.
How do they hold up?
Well, people always complain, about translating from the original language. You know, there are a lot of people who say, well, Jacques Brel has to be heard in French to be appreciated. And because the English translations are often somewhat different from the original, but his translations of Man of La Mancha's songs are somewhat different from the original too, but obviously quite effective. And that's what always, when I'm talking about the Alive and Well songs, which are really not very accurate English versions of the original French, and which in some instances aren't even the same song at all, I always have to, back off a little bit on that kind of criticism, because it's, with such a hugely successful show and the business of doing any kind of translation is always something that ought to make you fairly humble.
Yeah, I agree. So tell us about Lonesome Losers of the Night, what the concept is, because I thought it was a haunting show, and I spent some time in Amsterdam, and I felt like I was back in one of those dreary bars right on the waterfront.
Well, that's terrific, because actually I have to give lots of credit to Fred Anzavino on that. We did realize that two soldiers in a bar. We started off actually thinking about Harold Pinter's Betrayal, having a love triangle that we told backwards. From the end of the affair moving toward the beginning. And then we thought, well, it should be just a straightforward triangle with these two soldiers at this Amsterdam bar and the woman of dubious virtue for whom they compete. And then we thought a bartender, it's obviously going to be in a bar, so a bartender would be an obvious character to have. And Fred had in mind, I think, Eugene O'Neill's, ambience of, say, Anna Christie.
And it does remind me of that, yes.
Yeah, and that was that part of it was certainly Fred's brainchild, and I think he's, he's realized it beautifully, along with, David, choreography, David Hyman, and lighting and wonderful costumes, all of it done in a very understated way. And then, of course, the wonderful cast and Joshua Kurtz's incomparable musical direction and arrangements.
Yeah, I thought he did a terrific job. So tell us how you selected the 21 songs in this show. And by the way, folks, this is an intimate at the No Exit Cafe, very intimate show, 90-minute one act that will just grab you at the beginning and just carry you right through all the moods and the storyline, which without any dialogue, you guys paint a picture and tell a story.
Well, we wanted to have songs that were not ones that were totally familiar to audiences that might have heard Brel in English before. So we wanted to have some new translations, and we also obviously had to have some things that that sounded as if they could credibly be the kind of thing you'd hear in a bar, like the drunk, l'ivrogne, my friend, fill up my glass.
Yeah, the beer drinking, the beer drinking song early, the beer.
Yeah, beer. So some of those songs were you know, quite self-evident that ought to be in there. But we actually, we considered about maybe 40 different songs, and I translated as late as a few days before opening. I translated a couple of extra songs that we were considering, and then Fred, I think, very wisely said, look, you know, second thoughts are fine, but I think we've got the songs we need, and he really, as far as I'm concerned, was absolutely right. But we went back and forth on the songs, and we thought about whether we should include "Ne Me Quitte Pas," "Don't Leave Me," but we and you know, because that is perhaps Brel's best known song, other than "When We've Nothing But Love," and we finally decided, yeah, that had to be in there because of the love triangle, and also because many people have heard Rod McEwen's version translated as "If You Go Away," but not many people have heard what I would feel is the closer version that I translated.
Yeah, let's get into that about why a lot of people. I know Chris Jones told me from the Trib and other people who are much more familiar with Jacques Brel's work than I am, that your translations seem to have captured the essence and spirit of what Brel was doing. And I realize that there is always a problem with idioms in language, particularly in lyrics and in dialogue, in translating that. That's a built-in problem. So tell us your process and how you arrived at the meanings that you arrived at.
Well, actually, I do a literal translation first, and I think any translator worth his or her salt ought to have a dictionary, French English dictionary handy, and you know, not be arrogant enough to think that you can do it without that. But I try to do a literal translation first, and once I've gotten that, I then start working on saying the same thing, only in meter and rhyme, that will fit with the music. And I don't think I've started a translation of Brel's songs where at some point I haven't said to my wife, Debbie, gee, you know, I don't think I'm going to be able to do this one. This one's a toughie. And, but it always comes. And I really try to insist to myself on sticking as close to the original meaning as I can. And I've actually been fairly amazed that I've been able to come as close as I have.
Do you listen to Brel singing his own songs to the recordings of them?
I do listen to Brel, and although you can't do an awful lot of that, because you know, what you eventually say is, God, he sounds so great, why am I even doing this?
Because I can imagine
his French his Flemish songs too are so wonderful. But I think it is important for, you know, the many speakers of English who don't know French, that they have something that will give them an appreciation of Brel's artistry. And I felt when I first translated a song called Chanson de Vieux Amants, Song of the Old Lovers, which was on a Judy Collins album, and I knew that that hadn't been part of Alive and Well, and I translated that for myself and made it into a singable version. And I had always thought, well, the Alive and Well people have taken care of Brel, so there's not much point in doing more. And then I realized that If You Go Away, Rod McEwen's song, and Seasons in the Sun, another Rod McEwen version of a Brel song, I heard those and I thought, Jacques Brel couldn't possibly have written that. And I checked the French and discovered that indeed those songs had virtually nothing to do with what Brel's actual language was.
Why do you think they do that? Are they trying to just make it their own, or are they just trying to make it singable?
Well, I think making it singable. I get the impression sometimes that the translators of songs will start off with the best of intentions to to stay close if they can to the original, and then they'll realize that this is a lot of work, and they'll say, well, maybe I can take some poetic license. And in some instances, as with Alive and Well, there are a couple of songs that are very well known, Marathon and Carousel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know those.
I think also Les Flamandes, which was Marathon, and Carousel, which was La Valse à Mouton. Those two songs have nothing whatsoever to do with the original. And I think sometimes translators decide that the English-speaking public is not going to be interested in something that's as culturally specific as, say, those two songs are. Although, quite frankly, La Valse à Mouton, which is the waltz in thousandth time, or the waltz a thousand times, is a very universal sentiment. And I found I could translate it in a version that really pleased me with its closeness to the original and the singability. And Les Flamandes is Flemish women, and it's a satire on the bourgeois pretensions of Flemish women. Got Jacques Brel into great trouble when he first performed it with his Belgian countrymen, and he then wrote Flatland, which has sort of become an unofficial national anthem.
That was a terrific. It's in your show. With the guitar and the piano. It's a very sentimental, nostalgic folk song. Actually, I call it. That was one of the best songs in the show.
Yeah, I loved that song when I first encountered it. And I've translated about 75 of his songs now. So we had quite a few to pick from. And,
wow.
It was tough settling on those 21. But Fred has really wonderful sense of pace and timing, and how things should go together. And we decided early on that no intermission would be the way to go, just to sweep right through from beginning to end. And again, I'm grateful to have the chance to work with such talented people.
Well, let me add that how important it is for you to have found the spirit and the meanings that Jacques Brel wanted. It really comes across in the atmosphere you've created and the moods. These are losers. These are sad people that have had a tough life. And and that's what the universality of this thing is. You see them, you see their emotions, and the singers. Jeremy Traeger, Jenny Lamb, Eric Martin, Chris. How does he say? Dianio have done such a terrific job. So it is important that the translations be accurate.
Yeah, I love performing the songs myself, but boy, what a treat to sit back and just hear such wonderful performers do their stuff.
Yeah, you folks would be hard pressed to find four better performers and singers who sell in character. My particularly The song I liked the most was Eric Martin's doing My Childhood. Boy, that was pretty strong. That's another folk song, isn't it?
Very powerful.
Yeah.
And there's a fair amount of Jacques Brel, I think, in that one. Because he always did have a thing. There's a reference early in the song to his playing Indian brave and having dreams of the West. And that he's talking about the Wild West in America. And Brel actually did have that kind of sort of fascination with the American Wild West.
He also loved talking about the losers of society, right? The dregs, the alcoholics, drifters, prostitutes. In this case, kind of battle-hardened soldiers, too.
Yep. And he gave them a voice that, you know, only a true poet, I think, could give them. That's another interesting thing. I mentioned Brel and Georges Brassens. There's a very prestigious poetry series of books in France, and there are only two songwriters whose lyrics are included in that series of books, and one is Brel and one is Brassens. And I think that you know, gives you a real sense that this is not just, you know, a writer of ditties. He is a real poet.
Well, not only a poet in his language, which you so strongly bring out, but in his styles. I mean, in the 21 songs here, I mean, we hear ballads, we hear an operatic, almost a minuet, the drinking songs, folk songs, a few anthems, some bluesy, and even a couple of hymns.
And well, when he started off, he was, you know, pretty much a cabaret singer, and it was just Jacques Brel, his guitar, and his songs. And as his career progressed, he became much more musically adventurous. And of course, he was able to work with other composers like François Robert and Gérard Jouannet, and they wrote some of the tunes for some of his best songs. And he also then was able to explore fuller orchestration for pieces, and he became more of a performer on stage. He he actually became quite histrionic, dramatic, comic in his presentation.
Very interesting. And also, some of his lyrics, he used to like to take, correct me if I'm wrong on this, common everyday events and make them into songs, like the song Gas. If I heard it correct, it's about a guy coming to read the gas meter, and he ends up seducing the woman of the house.
Well, I think actually, and that's an interesting song to talk about, because I'm sort of guessing myself on this. What I think is that the person who's singing the song is taking the character of a customer of the prostitute, and he's imagining, you know, what his excuse could be for making this visit.
Oh, okay.
And I'm not a customer. I'm coming to read the gas.
Okay, I got it.
So,
But he did write songs like that about make a whole song out of a common everyday event, right? In the normal person's life.
Oh yeah, he certainly did. There's one song I've just translated, and I'm still tinkering with, which is about a man who has evidently murdered his unfaithful wife, and whose attorney is the person she was unfaithful to him with. So it's quite an ironic dramatic monologue.
Well, let's sum up about the show. It's Jacques Brel's Lonesome Losers of the Night, which has just opened at the No Exit Cafe, and You would not find a better show, a better $20 show, or a better show anywhere in Chicago. And they have a nice little dinner package you can get, and it's Friday, Saturday, and Sundays. And the singing is so good, and the feeling and the emotion of this show. You have to be proud of this piece.
Yep, it's very satisfying. Yeah. Well, I couldn't have hoped for anything better.
Yeah, it was amazing. And the reviews so far have been very strong, and that's great. Because they just won a bunch of Jeff Awards for Cabaret, and I got a feeling that you guys are going to be back up there next year with a couple of those trophies in your hand for this show.
Well, we hope so.
Yeah. Tell us now about your background, because are you still a college professor?
Actually, I'm about to end my professorial career. I've been at Western Michigan University for decades, and I'm the last decade I was chairman of the English department, and I'm about to, at the end of this month, stop doing any of that and full-time on writing.
Great, because you and your wife collaborate on a lot of the writing. So tell us about that interview, because you're much more than just a translator of Jacques Brel.
Well, Debbie writes a wonderful fiction, and she and I collaborate on plays. We've written about probably 30 one-acts and about a dozen full-length pieces, and we also write we've been writing quite a bit for of radio drama, and I write fiction and poetry as well as doing the plays. And then both of us work on other translations. We're working with a Romanian poet named Donna Roșu on translations from the Romanian. So we've got plenty to do, which is one of the reasons why we're turning to doing that full time.
Well, you also have a CD out, don't you, of Jacques Brel stuff?
Yes, I have.
Tell us about that and where they can get it.
It's called Jacques Brel, I'm Here, and it's on sale at the No Exit. Right now, the simplest way for people to get it is to get in touch with me, and I'll arrange to get them a copy.
Okay, how can they reach you?
They can email me at arnie dot Johnston, Johnston, at wmich.edu.
Okay, that's terrific. And they are on sale at the at No Exit Cafe.
Yes.
So good. When
that helps No Exit too, because yeah. No Exit is getting a cut of the price.
Well, that's terrific. And tell us about some of the project you have you're working on that we might be able to see. Another Jacques Brel show, maybe?
Yeah, that's a possibility. There's a Jacques Brel review coming up in Kalamazoo in the fall. I'm not sure what the title or the approach will be. It may be this one that's running as a No Exit. I have a novel coming out in January called The Witching Voice. That's a biographical novel about the Scottish poet Robert Burns.
Ooh, sounds interesting.
Yeah, January of next year is the 250th anniversary of his birth. So the novel's coming out in January, and in February there's going to be a production of a play I wrote with the same title in Kalamazoo. And there's another of Debbie's and my plays going to be produced in Kalamazoo called Beyond Sex.
Beyond Sex. That sounds interesting.
And we also just got a book of one-acts accepted for publication. It's called Duets. It's five or six plays for two performers, male and female.
Good. I hope you shop these plays here in Chicago, because, we're getting to be quite a hotbed of world premieres and of original works. I know I see 30 or 40 of them a year, and most of them are pretty darn good.
Well, we're hopeful that Chicago now that these two shows, Songs of Love and War and Lonesome Losers, have brought us to the attention of folks in Chicago, that maybe some of our other work will appeal to people here too.
Yeah, I'm definitely, and I'm sure Fred knows where to shop a lot of those plays. Well, it's been great, and I think people now have a better understanding that of who Jacques Brel is. I mean, I just can't tell people strongly enough to go see this Jacques Brel show, because it is just so beautifully sung, and it is so emotionally strong that it's just a fun piece.
Well, I sure appreciate the kindness, Tom, and I've thoroughly enjoyed talking with you, and I'll look forward to doing so again.
Yes, thank you, and folks, remember, go see a play this week.